It's time for the MMA Insiders.
What is up, everybody? MMA Insiders. I'm Adam Hill, Brett Okamoto, taking you through everything going on in the world of mixed martial arts this week, and that includes a fight card last weekend. We'll get into a lot of what happened on that card. A lot of things changing in a couple of divisions, and a interesting card in Nashville. I think we'll get into some of the fights on that card. Not the greatest main event of all time, but definitely some intriguing matchups along the way, and some news and notes around the world of MMA as well. First things first, the important stuff. Brett, how are you doing?
I am doing good. That's nice of you to put it, not the most exciting main event of all time.
It's not, and I actually feel bad because I do some other projects, and I was doing a Facebook Live video the other day, and there was some fan questions about this card, and I really, really crushed the main event, and I kind of felt bad.
Yeah.
Because I looked back and I was like, hey, it's on some level, like, these are guys that have worked their way up, and Lobov, when is he ever going to have a main event again? Like, this is a great opportunity for him and a really cool thing, but at the same time, like, you are putting on a UFC card and people expect the best fights, and when you have a guy like that in the main event, you do have to kind of call out that he probably doesn't deserve to be there.
I think it's part of the territory for Artem. He's getting certain opportunities that he doesn't deserve because he's a buddy of Conor McGregor. So, I would think that Artem is a guy with a lot of pride, and he feels like he's a good fighter, but he also, I'm sure, recognizes that. So it just got, if you're going to take some of the positives that come with it, then you have to deal with the negatives. And I think he does. I think he does a pretty good job of it. So you can just say that, this is a guy who's taken opportunities that's given to him. You can't blame him for that. I think it's a weird fight for Cub Swanson because there's really no payoff. If he doesn't look great, he could even win the fight and not look great, and then that's kind of a knock on him. He's coming off of this crazy awesome fight against the Korean Superboy last year. It was my pick for fight of the year. And then he gets this weird fight against Artem Lobov where he's like, it's backed into a corner. If he doesn't knock him out spectacularly with some crazy spinning thing, right?
Yeah.
Then it's basically a loss for him. Not a loss, but he doesn't gain anything out of it. So
yeah.
I think that's what people's reaction to this is, that not that like they're that upset about the fight, but it's just like, why? This fight is just strange. And then to put it as a headliner just doubles down on that,
But then they do, and we'll get into some of the matchups on the card, but then you do throw some exciting matchups. Like anytime you have Joe Lozano on a card, it's going to be entertaining, and there's at least some guys that you feel are going to bring some excitement to the event. So if you tune in and you're like, I made the joke last week, and I saw other people do the same thing, they had a production error, they listed the Lobov Cub Swanson fight as the main event. Like, no, that's the main event, but there is other reasons to tune in. We'll get into some of those matchups, make some picks on the Nashville card later on in the show. Hopefully even hear from one of the guys on that card, one of the guys that people might be tuning in to watch. And we'll see how things work out on that card coming up this week. And then a big break until one of the best fight cards ever on paper that I've seen, UFC 211. I'm really stoked about that one. Have a little break before then, but plenty of time to talk about what is going on in the world of mixed martial arts. And that really starts and ends, I hate to say it, I don't like doing it, but there's something in the business called playing the hits, and sometimes you just have to.
Yeah.
And I cannot tell you, and I'm sure you get the same thing, where you go around, you have family in town, you have friends in town, you're talking to people, and they might not follow the sport very closely, but then anytime they find out like what you do, or if somebody's like, hey, what's going on with you? Oh, whoa, what is going up with Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather? It happens all the time. I'm sure the same thing happens to you.
Absolutely, man. I'm asked on a regular basis from random people, family members, as you described, who don't really follow the sport as closely. But even, I was out at a sort of a work function for my wife the other night, and you run into her coworkers, and they know what you do, and it is the go-to. It is the absolute go-to. What's up with that? What's up with that Mayweather McGregor fight? Is it going to happen? Yeah, I'm asked about it on pretty much a daily basis.
So we get little bits of information pretty much every day. It's not going to happen. It is going to happen. I know last real development in the story, although it's something we've kind of already felt and believed and heard a couple times, but Dana White came out, UFC 210, post-fight press conference, and talked about it and said, it's not close, but it's closer than to happening than ever, and I think it's going to happen. It's probably going to happen. I'm going to negotiate with Connor, get that deal done, and then go over and have Floyd work out the deal with his people, and then we'll come together, see what comes of it. But he said there's just too much money involved, and he just believes it's going to happen. So that was one of the latest developments. Now we have another one, and this week Dana White goes on with Colin Cowherd, and it seems like that's a place where he likes to go and you know, advance stories or break stories or, you know, get information out there because he knows, you know, it'll blow up big. Everybody hears it. Everybody listens to it, and they'll find out. And so Dana White now gives out numbers, which this is a new development, and this is just another possibility that happens. Now, this nothing's done, and he, in fact, said it's not that close.
Like,
It's not like we're going to sign this tomorrow.
Yeah.
This is just what I believe to be a starting point or an approximation. And he cautioned, but not everybody listened to this part, where he's like, I'm not saying this is closed. The deal is progressing. I'm working with Connor. Then I'll go work with Floyd. But let's get into exactly what he said. Because again, as I'll reiterate it, not close. But I think we get the McGregor side in the next couple of days. Now, that's just one side. That's the side that Dana White believes he can negotiate. He thinks he can figure that out. Obviously, it's his guy, so he's going to be closer to doing that one. But I think we can get that done in the next couple of days. And then I go lock myself in a room for a couple of days with Team Mayweather and see what we can come up with. Now, again, that was always going to be the biggest part because we thought that he could get something done with McGregor as far as what does the UFC get, what does he get, what is going on. But I do think the one thing with the numbers coming out and with the way he's describing this is that it is going to be a UFC production. Like, the UFC is going to do this. They're going to come to a deal with Connor. They're going to come to a deal with Floyd. And then the UFC is going to get their cut out of that because he said a lot of these numbers are going to be based on how the fight does. So that means they're going to control the money and how it gets dispersed.
Maybe. I mean, these updates, and then we've talked about this before. These updates, you have to just be careful with them because we're so starved for what's going on. You know, like you and I just talked about. We're asked about it repeatedly every day. Sometimes there is no update, but, you know, you've got Dana on Colin Cowherd, and Cowherd is asking him questions about this, and Dana understands, like, he wants something. Like, I'm expected to almost kind of give something here.
Yeah.
So even if there's not an update, then you just kind of create one, you know? And so maybe these numbers could end up being what they are, or maybe they're just what Dana White decided to throw out there on Colin Cowherd, and he figured, you know what, it's not going to... They're numbers that everyone's like not going to necessarily agree to, but at least they're not going to be like incendiary numbers that, like, you know, Floyd. I don't imagine that Floyd's going to come out and say, oh, this is all like it's just numbers. I'm not putting a whole lot, I guess.
You don't think that Floyd's going to listen or read this online and say, sounds good, let's do it? I don't think it's going to happen.
I think it's a situation in which I'm not saying that Dana is just completely fabricating updates, but I'm saying that there's like some kind of basic media pressure on him to say something new that he hasn't been saying, and so he puts this out there. But this could change. This could be. This is just a starting point, I guess. You know,
and it's approximation and a starting point. I think it's all those things. But that. So he said, "I'll lock myself in a room with them after we get the deal done with Connor, and we'll see what we can come up with." And then Colin, of course, followed up with, "Well, what's the hold up?" And of course, it's money. I mean, everybody's known that. We've known that for a long time. That's the biggest one. There's a lot of other things, as Dana mentioned. There's going to be size of the ring, size of the gloves. All those other things are going to be part of it.
Lots of stuff.
But you have to start with the money. You have to come to the money agreement first. And Dana White said, it depends how much the fight sells. And if the fight sells as well as I think it will, Floyd makes a little north of $100 million. Connor makes $75 million. So there you have a number out there. I said from the beginning, I don't think 100 each would get it done.
$100 million is a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
$100 million is a number that Connor has put out there publicly, you know, and Connor's a very smart guy, and maybe he, to some degree, even underestimated how big this would get, how quickly it would get big. You know, when I'm talking about a year ago, you know, when it was first coming out, and I don't know, I can't remember exactly when he threw out that $100 million number, but maybe even he was thinking, well, $100 million would be great, and then he's not maybe thinking that that's an actual realistic number, because I would think that Connor would put out a number that he just didn't even think was possible. I mean, that's what you always do, right? You put out the bigger number. I don't know, man. It reminds me of the quote that Anthony Marnell from the Nevada State Athletic Commission gave me last month, you know, when Connor was coming to Las Vegas, and I was asking him, you know, you're the head of the commission. If this fight's going to happen, I'm sure, you know, you're in tune to at least some of the things that are going on behind the scenes. He's like, of course. And look, there are real conversations about having this fight. Everybody wants $100 million. That's what he said back then. Everybody who is involved wants $100 million. I want $100 million. I want $100 million. I just don't know if there's going to be enough hundred millions of dollars to go around. So I think that these numbers are good, you know, baseline numbers of what could maybe make people happy. I do think Connor would take the fight for $100 million. I even think he would probably take it for $75
million. Yeah, maybe. I think we then start getting in egos, though, because I think if you look at this, and I think if it's $100 for Floyd and $75 for Connor, that breaks down to something like 57-43 or 58-42, something like that, as far as a percentage breakdown. And I don't know that Floyd would accept that, because we know he's a guy who in the past has said, I don't necessarily care what the number is. I just need to have my percentage be at a certain level. Now, does it change if it's $100 million, or does he still say, you know what, I need 75%. I need 80%. Whatever number he needs, does he have to get to that? And then if he says, well, if Connor's getting 75, I need to get 125. Does Connor then come back and say, yeah, then I need 100? Like, I mean, that's how these things are going to break down, where even if it's a lot of money, egos can still get involved at that point.
If it becomes a waiting game, that would have to advantage Mayweather, correct? I would think Connor would have more incentive to fight sooner, and the UFC would start to put pressure on him, like, all right, this is not happening. You know, we need to get you back in the octagon. So I guess, speaking to the point that you just made, if Floyd, and this is crazy, man, like, we're throwing around these numbers like they mean nothing. We're talking about $100 million. But if Floyd decided, just for egotistical reasons, no, you know, I don't see Connor as being worthy of, you know, a percentage in the 40s. I am going to be the one that carries this thing. If he really, truly goes with that, I guess in his own mind, he could also say, I mean, I'm cool. You know, if there's going to be pressure to make this fight, it's more is going to be placed on Connor than me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Just to follow up on what else Dana White said with Colin Cowherd this week, he feels like the A side and he should get more of it. That's, of course, speaking of Floyd. We haven't really gotten into that negotiation yet. I wanted to get McGregor locked in first because McGregor's under contract with me, and at the end of the day, does this fight make a ton of sense for me? It really doesn't. But Connor wants this thing really bad, and I've said many times, the kids stepped up and saved some big fights for me, so I'm in. I'll figure it out. So again, that leads you to, you know, and then he went on to say the stuff about what we said before. Still have to negotiate things like gloves and the officials and the judges, how big the ring is, all that stuff. But he's saying, I'm going to figure out the Connor side, then we'll try to figure out the Floyd side, then the UFC is going to have to get their cut, then Floyd's team is going to have to all get their cut. Heyman is going to Al Heyman is who Dana is probably going to negotiate with.
Mayweather's advisor.
Right. And so all these people need to get their cut. And by the way, just to throw another wrinkle into it, Al Heyman's company is potentially in some trouble. So how much do they need to get out of this? It's a lot to be worked out, for sure. And I know that there's updates. I know people are excited. I think at some point we're going to be excited, and it'll start to look like it could happen. But for right now, I just think the fact that the numbers are thrown out, people got very happy today and like, oh boy, we're moving. I would caution.
Yeah. If anything, listening to all of White's quotes, not just pulling out the $175 million, but going through and actually listening to everything he said today, I'm not saying that it's lessened my opinion of how likely it is that we see the fight, but it has certainly not increased it.
No.
It has not increased it at all. It's the same thing that we've been saying. Different parties have an interest in making this. They have a real interest in making it, but there are so many landmines and so many different scenarios and situations in which the entire thing can blow up at any moment.
But isn't it really happening June 10th at T-Mobile Arena? Haven't we heard that?
I'm not clearing my schedule for that day.
Yeah,
say that.
Neither am I. All right. Well, that was you know, one of the big stories of the week. It's always the big story. It'll be pretty much the big story of the week every week until it happens. So we get some new information. We don't really know what it means or when it can come together, but there is numbers out there. At least there's numbers that have been thrown out to potentially make the fight work, and we'll see if they make any progress. And I'm sure we'll hear another Dana White interview with Colin Cowherd soon. With
we're gonna get
some
like,
more people jump at.
Are we going to get just like one tiny update at a time? Like, it's not going to be just like, all right, deal's done. Here's all the details. It's going to be like, oh, this one little leak detail. Or, oh, this one little leak to like, this is what I want.
Either
going to
have little leaks, and then at the end it'll be, it's done. Okay, what just happened? It all came together.
Yeah.
And I think we'll go from, will it happen, to it's done. And like one, I don't think it's going to be like, they've come to an agreement on money. But can they come to an agreement on the size of the ring? We'll find out next week.
It needs that moment. You remember when Mayweather and Pacquiao ran into each other at the Heat game?
Yeah.
And I don't think that was purely coincidental.
No.
I think that was, you know, something that that Mayweather essentially created. But what would be the run-in between Conor and Floyd? And the world will just go crazy about that. I mean, that has to happen. Just for promotional sake, let's say they both say, like, all right, we've made a deal. Everything's good. Let's not announce it yet, though. Let's just, like, drag this on a little bit. Let's meet in some public place and say the fight's still not signed, even though it is. Like, I'm not saying that would actually happen, but what would it be that these two would cross paths and the world would blow up, that they were in the same room together?
I think it would have to be, like, there would have to be some major event. I don't think it would be a sporting event necessarily. Maybe, God, how long down the road could it be? Like, could it be World Cup next year?
World Cup? That's not going to happen. The World
awesome.
Cup.
Be great.
Like, maybe like some like, because they both love money, obviously, you know? Like, is there, I don't know anything about horse racing. What's it like a big horse race that they could both be
actually
in fancy clothes, be in a box?
Kentucky Derby?
Like Floyd's got a box over here, Connor's got a box over here. You know, they arrive with their entourages.
I was just thinking something over
millions of dollars of clothes on him.
Yeah, Kentucky Derby could work, because Connor's partying days recently started with that the big horse race in England.
Right.
So maybe he comes over to the Kentucky Derby. Floyd dresses up in some weird clothes.
Yeah.
Without the big hat.
Yeah. They meet up in some celebrity's like box. Some suite. You know, like Justin Timberlake or like Bieber is up there.
Yeah.
You know, Bieber takes his shirt off. They get photos of it.
I think this is good. This is a good scenario that we'll have to track. Maybe we can try to help coordinate this.
I mean, I'm just handing out free ideas at this point.
Yeah, I like it. It's good.
Have these guys meet up at the Kentucky Derby. Boom.
The Heat game, in retrospect, like, that was a major moment in sports history, obviously, but it was a Heat game. Like, I guess back then it was LeBron, so it was kind of different. It was the place
totally
to be.
Different because of who the Heat was.
I'm thinking
still,
of the Heat now that are just terrible and not in the playoffs.
The Kentucky Derby would trump that a million times over, I feel like.
Yeah, it'd be good. Hopefully this comes together. And we can have our big moment and book the fight that way, but probably unlikely. It's going to happen on their own terms, and we'll figure out where this goes in the next couple of weeks, months, years. Who knows how long it takes? But the latest updates on Floyd and Connor will get you more next week, I'm sure. But right now, we'll turn our attention to the fights that went on last week and what's going on this coming week in Nashville and the UFC when we continue on the MMA Insiders.
MMA Insider Show. It's time for the MMA Insiders.
All right, here we continue on the MMA Insiders, looking at everything going on in the world of MMA. We had a big card over the weekend. Demetrius Johnson defends the title. We'll get into a little bit of that and take a look at the UFC card in Nashville. Mike Perry will join us to wrap things up in just a few minutes. He will be on that card against Jake Ellenberger. But let's first look at the weekend card with Demetrius Johnson in action. That was a Fox card in Kansas City. Demetrius Johnson goes in there, defends the title for the 10th straight time against Wilson Hayes, and I thought it was a pretty spectacular performance from start to finish. Couldn't find many flaws in it. Again, I don't know that the challenger was that great, as we've seen in several of Demetrius Johnson's fights, but all he can do is take care of business, and he certainly did.
Yeah, it's like the same story kind of over and over again. It almost got to a point where, like, right around, like, the fifth or sixth title defense, it's like, all right, I mean, this is just going to happen. And, you know, when he ties Anderson Silva's record of 10 and then breaks it, well, then we'll have something to talk about. But up until then, we're kind of just, like, biding our time until we get there. And that's, like, a terrible way of describing what's going on, but I think for a lot of people, that's basically what it was. They didn't care about title defense number 7, title defense number 8, title defense number 9. which is just crazy because we know that it's very, very difficult to maintain a UFC title for that long. But Demetrius Johnson has made such a mockery of it. He does it so easily that, you know, it's almost like, well, we're not really going to be able to talk about this and have a great discussion about it until he just does it, ties and breaks the record, which now he's tied it.
So that's 10 in a row. He can break the record of Anderson Silva with number 11. And the talk, of course, turned to, is he the best of all time? I know Dana White, after the fight, said it's hard to say that he's not. I will make a case that he's not. But first, I'll ask you, who is the greatest of all time?
Without really, you know, taking up the entire show talking about this, because I feel like I can go down a rabbit's hole on it. I've always been of the opinion, and I used to say this about John Jones as well, is that in my mind, and maybe this is just like a personal thing, it probably is, that I see a difference between the greatest of all time and the best. I think just the term greatest, it almost like invokes Muhammad Ali, and I think it stands for almost something a little bit different because this is combat sports. It's not just a sport. And in combat sports, other things go into it. You know, there's almost like artistic value goes into it, entertainment value, promoting value goes into everything. And in my mind, the greatest of all time in this sport still at this moment is Anderson Silva. And that doesn't mean he can't be topped, but he's the greatest, the best of all time, the best blend of just all around, well-rounded skills, mixed martial arts skills is Demetrius Johnson. That's how I view it.
Yeah, I guess I really haven't made the, you know, made that difference. I haven't made that, you know, separated that out. But I've always said that it's John Jones. I just think the path that he took, the people that he beat, it's been unbelievable. And I know that it's been, you know, tainted in a way from what's happened outside the cage. But I think it's really tough to look at the resume that he put together and not say that he's the best of all time. And I think best and greatest. I'll accept your, you know, your meaning and say that, you know, he wouldn't fit into that. But I just think he's the best fighter I've ever watched. He has the best resume I've ever seen anybody put together. It's going to be tough for anybody to top that. And, you know, we'll see. I think he can tarnish that legacy if he comes back and he's not the same guy or things are different. But to me, it's going to be tough for anybody to go past what he did. And I guess if Demetrius Johnson goes like 16 in a row, it really wouldn't matter at that point, maybe who he's defending against. He's taking on all challengers, but it's going to be a while for his streak to match what John Jones was able to do with the people that he was able to beat during that time that he was champion.
It's tough. It's tough to like come to some clear answer as to, because there is no right answer really. And I feel like a lot of people bring up John Jones when I say, you know, Anderson was the greatest and Demetrius is the best, and I can't really argue that.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, John was really on the cusp of being like both greatest and best. He was like on the cusp of like just having it all in my mind. And then, you know, we saw what happened with him. And hopefully he'll be able to come back and get on track and that would still be available to him.
Real quick before we move on to a couple other news stories. We also saw Rose Namajunas, Robert Whittaker make huge flashes in their fights. You know, Robert Whittaker is not going to be the top contender because the division is so cloudy, but he's certainly up there in that mix now, and he's young, certainly on the rise. Rose Namajunas, I think, has all the talent in the world, and she really started to put it together a little bit. I was very impressed with what she did, and she actually could be in the mix for Jessica Andrade's title soon.
I like how you do that. Well, I mean, yeah, I think she's going to get a title shot next, and she's 25.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what's kind of crazy. You forget about that. And that's what happens in sort of these divisions that are still basically being built. You know, I mean, she was part of that first wave of strawweights that came in on the reality show. She was in the inaugural title fight at age, what, 23?
Yeah.
So her best days are clearly still ahead of her. And she's established herself as, you know, top five easily in this division. I mean, Karolina Kowalkiewicz is still up there. Rose lost to her last year. Your girl, Andrade, Ioana, of course, Claudia Gadelha, and Rose. I mean, that five has really, I think, distinguished themselves.
Yeah, it should be a fun division to watch, and we'll see what happens with Robert Whittaker next. That could be very interesting in that title picture with, you know, when George St. Pierre fights and with Bisping and how that all comes together, and then does Whittaker fight a guy like Yoel Romero potentially to really solidify who the top contender is? I mean, Yoel Romero is. So it's weird to say that, but he's still waiting. So what happens with those fighters? I think the 185-pound class, especially with St. Pierre coming into it, even if it's just for one fight, is very interesting.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely interesting. I just don't really like what's happening at the top of it.
Right,
it
sucks.
But my guess is that Romero will continue to hang out, and as long as the UFC re-signs Gegard Mousasi, I would like to see Robert Whittaker fight Mousasi. I think that's a great fight.
Yeah, I would look forward to that one as well. That would be that's actually a really good fight if they can put that together and if that re-signing happens. Real quick, because I wanted to get into a real quick breakdown of some of the fights on the Nashville card, but there was a fight-fixing story that came out this week, and it didn't come out this week. I know that I was trying to find out some details about this when it happened. It was around Thanksgiving of 2015, and I know this because, and you will appreciate this, Brett, that I was actually on a wine tasting tour at Napa Valley when I got wind of what was going on in the betting markets.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah. It was my one and only time doing that. I was making fun of that for a long time, and then I went, and it was amazing and extraordinary, and I recommend it to anyone. It was fantastic.
It's embarrassing how much day. I loved wine tasting in Napa.
It really is.
Absolutely embarrassing.
It was. It really was, but I was so happy. But yeah, I remember being there taking calls, and like I'm trying to get back to my Chardonnay right now. Would you please stop calling me with what's happening in the betting markets? But the names have not really come out. People have put it together who the names are, who was in the fight. But a lot of people already knew this because it was a fight that went from -$2, and people in Las Vegas, like a lot of people don't understand this. Listeners here in Las Vegas, you will. It went from -$2 to +$7,
like very quickly,
very quick, within 2 hours. And the it went crazy. I got calls about it. I actually called some people because the UFC regulates the fights in Korea when they go there. Mm-hmm. So I actually called some people around the regulation part of it. We're like, hey, I don't know what's going on there, but have you guys heard anything? Do you know what's happening? And then what we now know, what I heard was told off the record and couldn't really go anywhere with the story, was that UFC officials went into the locker room and they were like, we know what's happening here. Knock it off. Now, in the end, the fighter who was, I'm terrible with the Korean names, but it was Bang.
Last name, Bang.
Lack of a better term.
Let's just say.
And even worse, he was fighting Kuntz. It makes it even tougher.
Sure.
But yes, that was a famous fight because the names were, you know, matched up together so well. But he was told, knock it off. He did. He actually went out and won the fight when he was supposed to lose. Then he got scared, and now he has gone to the police and said, hey, people are after me. I was supposed to fix this fight. I didn't. In the end, I guess what you can say is it worked how it was supposed to in that it was discovered. They figured it out. They talked to him.
Yeah.
They let him go through with the fight, and he won. I don't like that it was blocked and covered up so much because, like I said, I was trying to get this. Were you working on the story at the time? Do you remember this?
Oh, I definitely remember.
Okay, yeah.
I definitely remember it, and I remember that's why everybody wanted to watch that prelim.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, what, third fight on the card?
Yeah.
And we're talking about a prelim. Yeah, that's what made it even more strange was that it was a fight that normally very few people would bet on this,
right.
If any.
Yeah.
And all this money was coming in.
Right. And so we had heard off the top, off the record, as I said, and nobody would ever confirm it, and we couldn't really get much further with the story that somebody had actually gone into the locker room from the UFC and said, we know this is happening, don't do it. And now that has come out in the South Korean report as well. I guess the takeaway right now is that safeguards were somewhat in place. People did figure it out. The regulation of the betting market figured it out, and we went through with it. But it is a little bit scary, a little bit concerning, certainly, that this was possibly going to happen at the UFC level.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's just a weird, you know, because you're talking about the journalism side of it, which interests me, of course. And it's kind of one of those stories where everybody who was aware of what was going on and are in the know and who are having conversations with people, you kind of knew.
Yeah.
But it was, as a journalist, you can't really report it unless you have, you know, enough sources, enough people speaking about it on record. So it was just kind of one of those stories that was sort of out there that people were aware of, and yet it was going to take something like this guy going to the officials in South Korea for it to actually officially come out to the light of day. And I guess if you're the UFC, you don't mind this. I mean, you never want to see the UFC and fight fixing in a headline, but then once people read this story, they're like, well, okay. I mean, they recognized it. They did something about it. So if you're the UFC, I guess you're not completely bothered by this story.
The guy that was supposed to lose won. So right. At the end, it didn't really work out the way that anybody had hoped. And then move on.
It was a split decision. It was a close fight. If the judges would have gone the other way, Does I mean, that's one person. That is one person looking at that fight slightly different and giving it 29-28 the other direction. And this story has far more legs. And it'd be interesting to know, you know, what would have happened.
And Bong Bang, however you want to actually pronounce his name, I think it is Bong, is the proper way to go.
That's not as fun.
It is not. Well, it's still kind of fun. Bong Bang, it's all fun. He actually knocked him down in the first round and was close to finishing, didn't, and then the fight kind of evened out from there. So it could have been a drastically different story, but as it is, we will monitor what goes on for, you know, in this investigation as it proceeds. But the guy that who was supposed to lose won the fight, and that's how we got to where we are now, with him being a little bit scared of some of the bettors out there.
It does make me want to watch the movie Snatch, though.
Yeah, I can see that.
It makes me. I haven't watched that in a few years, so
it's been
maybe
a little bit for me.
This is on my mind now. I'll go home and watch Snatch tonight.
That'll be a good idea. I think that'll be fun. Real quick, we've got Nashville coming up, and we have a couple minutes to go down some of the numbers, and we'll kind of race through them. But Cub Swanson is a massive -6 favorite against Artem Lobov. Yes, that is the main event. Lobov, no chance.
Nah, not really.
We'll just move on quickly from that one. Al Iaquinta and Diego Sanchez. Diego Sanchez is always fun, but Diego Sanchez is a big underdog here, and Iaquinta is coming back off his retirement / real estate sales career.
Holdout. Really, a contract.
It was a contract holdout. It was, and he's about $4 favorite in this one. Any chance for Sanchez to give him a scare?
Yeah, but it's just hard to put money on Diego Sanchez these days. It has been for a while. It's just the way in which he fights. If the guy comes in, and Iaquinta is a pretty good, I don't know if you can call him a prospect anymore, but he's a talented fighter, so I don't know. I would probably put my money elsewhere.
Try to stick with some of the more OSPs on the card against Marcos Rogério de Lima. But I'm more interested, I think, in the John Dodson, Eddie Wineland fight. John Dodson, a big favorite, but his fights are always fun to watch.
As are usually Eddie Wineland.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and you got Eddie Wineland, who's a really slick mover, counterpuncher. You got Dodson, who's got a lot of incredible speed and power, even though he's given up size. So, yeah, it's a fun fight.
And we've got Joe Lozon as a +175 underdog. Anytime Joe Lozon is an underdog, I like to take a look at it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, against Stevie Ray as a it's a pretty big number for him to be laying against Lozon.
I agree.
Yeah, so I would if you're looking for an underdog and you want to get your money in on somebody, I would look at Lozon +$1.75. And we save this fight because we do have Mike Perry coming up in a minute or two here, and we'll talk to him about his fight with Jake Ellenberger. But Ellenberger +155, Mike Perry coming back -180 as the favorite in this one. We will talk to Mike Perry. We'll get his mindset, but how do you analyze that fight by those odds?
I would want to take a look at Ellenberger because he does have, you know, the wrestling in his back pocket. He's a guy who has a hard time pulling the trigger on the feet, I guess. But when he does pull the trigger, he's proven himself to be a pretty capable stand-up guy. So I would imagine most people would be taking a look at the underdog here. But I do have to say that it doesn't look like Ellenberger feels completely comfortable taking punches these days.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of worry about his durability, and Perry is just a guy who comes at you.
He will test your chin, for sure.
He's going to test your chin, and so if Ellenberger feels something he doesn't like, you know, this could go south real quick, so.
All right, we will hear what Mike Perry has to say about that matchup when we come back on the MMA Insiders on a Thursday.
MMA Insider Show. It's the MMA Insider. MMA Insider. The inside scoop and hardcore fight talk from the experts. Now, here's your hosts, Steve Cofield and Adam Hill.
All right, well, as we mentioned, there is a UFC card this weekend. It is over in Nashville, headlined by Cub Swanson and Artem Lobov. One of the other fights on the card that I think is, you know, one of those matchups that fans are really paying attention to just because it's a fun matchup. It's one that should have a lot of striking involved, and that is a welterweight fight between Jake Ellenberger and Mike Perry, who joins us from the phone. He is in Nashville. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. Yo, what's good, everybody?
We are all good here in Vegas. You know, how's Nashville? You get a chance to take a look at it so far, or are you just kind of stuck in a hotel room the whole time?
No, I seen around a little bit. I went downtown. I actually got invited to this fundraising event for Make-A-Wish Foundation for through the Kevin Carter Foundation, and this guy Randy from Knockout Radio, he invited me out to do a celebrity table serving thing, like me and a bunch of other celebrities like Kelly Pickler and the Tennessee Titans football quarterback, and some WWE wrestlers and country singers were all out there, and we had aprons on, and we were mingling with the crowd and all these rich folks who were there to donate money and eat steak and lobster. I served a couple tables, a little bit.
Wow.
Some champagne. It was pretty cool, man.
You like to kind of try and stay busy during fight week, keep your mind off the fight, and get out and see the city a little bit, or what is like your fight week process?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I like to sit around a lot too. Don't get me wrong. I like to relax. It's definitely important to relax, wind down. But I do like to get out. I go to these new places. I just walk around the city and wait for, you know, I eat every 4 hours, so I usually wait for those times, and then I'll find a nice little restaurant to go have some chicken or fish at. And I went to the mall yesterday, did a little shopping here in Nashville. The mall was huge. It was pretty cool, and they had a nice seafood restaurant that was in an aquarium, and like we were looking at the fish, and I had some steak and lobster and some mashed potatoes since I was doing pretty good on my weight cut.
There you go. Well, Brett mentioned a minute ago, we expect a striking matchup. Not a whole lot of guys out there want to stand and strike with you, but do you expect him to just kind of stand there and trade shots with you, or do you expect him to go a different route?
Jake Ellenberger is a vet, man. He's a mixed martial artist, and he's good at everything. He's got some power in his hands, and he can throw some kicks too. He stopped Matt Brown with a kick to the body. I don't know everything in his record, but I'm sure he's got some submissions in there out of the 50 fights that he has. So he's a well-rounded veteran of the game. So I got to watch my P's and Q's everywhere. But we'll see whatever he wants to do. I'm down to stand and throw hands with anybody. But I'm going to stick and move a little bit, draw him to me, see if when I hit him, he goes for clinch up and see if I can knee him and elbow him, and then if he tries to take me down, either stop that, get a sweep, a submission, or end up on top, finish him with ground and pound.
It's UFC welterweight Mike Perry. He's fighting Jake Ellenberger on Saturday down in Nashville on the UFC card. This camp has been a little different for you in the fact that you haven't had to be in a camp where you were dealing with a loss. How was it different for you? Was there a mental approach you had to change and kind of figure out, okay, now I have to bounce back from that. I have to do something a little differently in my approach.
No, I guess I turned up the heat a little bit. I had some more in the gas tank to realize that I could push myself further than I had been. Maybe I was taking it a little easy on myself and didn't know how short 15 minutes was. Thought that if I pushed, I would get tired in 15 minutes, but I don't think that's possible. We trained for 2 hours, 2.5 hours at a time to fight for 15 minutes or 25 minutes, and I just needed to push myself a little more. I needed to be more strict on my diet, meaning the whole camp, eat clean, rather than just the last week. Last time I lost about 21 pounds in the last week. This time I came here with about 9 or 10 pounds to go, so that's been helpful. I've been more comfortable, and I don't know, man, went back to the beginning and I reset my brain. I think I learned a lot from my last fight. I grew up in my head, and this time it's like, you know, the more advanced you are, you go back to the basics over and over again in your career of training and your life, and what happens is as you become smarter or better at what you do, it's not that you learn something new, it's that when you learn the same thing again, your body takes it in differently, or you understand it better now and you use it more to your advantage.
Was it tough right after the fight? You know, we've talked to different fighters over the years who handle or deal with their first loss in different ways. But right after the fight, were you motivated right away, or were you sad? Were you depressed? How did you kind of deal with it right in the aftermath?
I mean, I was pissed off, but I was ready to get back in there and fight. I just, the way things happened, it seemed as if I was forced to sit down for a little bit. You know, I fought 3 times in 4 months. At the end of the year, last year, when I got into the UFC, I was trying to fight, and it seems like they made me take a seat between my manager and me, and my manager and them, and me and them, and it's just the way it played out. I kind of let God do his thing, and I just I walk around and try to enjoy life, and I wait for that phone to ring, and I don't ever turn it down. I never say no.
So I guess how did you come about this fight, making this fight with Ellenberger? Was it something that was discussed, you know, behind the scenes? Did they offer it to you? Did you ask for him? How did that all come together?
Well, I mean, I asked for a couple of fights with my manager. I know I was trying to get the Albert Tumanov fight because he had beat Joe Bann, and we kind of made a little spark on social media between me and him, and my manager said he would ask for the fight, and I'm sure something came up. They offered him Jake Ellenberger to me, and he called me, and he already knew I was going to accept. I mean, a top 15 fight's even better than the Albert Tumanov fight. So, you know, either way, either any fight they offered me, I was going to take it. Is that, you know, we're all trying to push my career in the right direction. There's a lot of people believe in me. A lot of people hate on me, and you know it's all good because I'm gonna get in there and I'm gonna perform to the best of my abilities. I'm gonna try to entertain and put on a good show.
You did mention the haters. You also talked earlier about, you know, some charity stuff that you were doing. How have you kind of dealt with the fact that there are people out there that don't like you and don't like some of what they've seen from you earlier in your career?
Who are they? I don't really care. You know, I don't know these people. There's just a bunch of fake profiles on Twitter and Instagram and social media, and or even if they're real people. I haven't seen anybody talk any trash to my face. So, I mean, and if somebody did, what are they going to do? Are they going to sign the contract? Are they going to get me paid, you know, thousands of dollars to put these hands on them? You know what I mean? There's things, my hands are worth more than just some idiot's mouth who thinks he drinks and can fight because he's been in a bar brawl or two. And half of them guys have never punched nobody in their life. They're just talking about what they see and what they think, how they feel about something. They're just mad because I'm doing better than them. And it doesn't matter to me, man, as long as my family's happy and I'm being taken care of, and I'm taking care of people over here. So,
Mike, have you adjusted your approach at all, though, when it comes to social media or just when the cameras are on, you know, an interview like this? I mean, it was no secret that earlier in your career, you said some things that maybe some people took offense to. I mean, how aware of that were you, and have you changed your approach at all, or are you of the mindset of, I'm just going to be myself, and if people don't like it, then that's their problem, it's not mine?
I mean, yeah, I'd have to say I am myself, and if people don't like it, that's their problem. There are some things I do have to approach, like when I'm doing interviews and things like that, I try to catch myself from cursing, you know, and things like that. You got to pay attention to things like that. You have to focus on being a better person out here in this world, and that's part of the game too, not just the fighting part. But as far as things I said in the beginning that people had a problem with, I don't know, maybe you're talking about the racist comment that I didn't make, that it never came out of my mouth, and it wasn't even a big deal. It wasn't serious. It was just, I don't even need to go back there, man. It's just, people take things to heart. They find somebody doing well and they want to hate on them. That's fine with me. I never did nothing to nobody except sign the contracts and ruin a couple guys' careers. And I don't even know if I ruined them. You know what I mean? I don't know. Some people, well, I mean, I don't know. Some people I fought had surgery, so That would suck pretty bad.
But. Hey, last question from me. Do you feel as if the UFC is behind you right now? Just with the entertaining fighting style that you have, you opened up the card in Sacramento on Big Fox. This weekend's card, Fox Sports 1, I believe it's the same deal, right? You are opening the main card on Fox Sports 1. Usually we look at that first slot on these televised cards as that's where the UFC wants to put their entertaining fight. They want to draw the viewer in. Are you aware of that, that you're playing that role for them, and are you proud of that?
Absolutely, if that's what it is. I mean, I'm sure they want to get behind me, and they want to believe the hype, but I'm going to show them this weekend. I mean, it was nothing but a little setback for a major comeback last time, and I'm willing to put myself on the line, my life on the line every time I fight. I'm looking for somebody to finish me. I mean, I've been working on my game to try to win a decision if it comes to that, but I'm not trying to go to decision. Every person I stand in front of, I'm trying to. Points is not an issue for me. My fighting style is not for points. It's to win, to finish. I press forward and I try to cut my angles and hit people with hard shots that they're not going to like and they're going to want to quit. So, I mean, hopefully that's what they're looking for. If not, I'll keep training, keep getting better, and I'll give the world what they want, because I'm here to put on entertaining fights. That's why I became a fighter. I want to be the best fighter I can be, and that the possibilities are endless.
I've read a story about you that you told everybody in high school, or you had an assignment in high school where you told people at that point you were going to be UFC champion, and you know that was certainly something that seemed like it was so far off, but now you know you're there, you have a couple wins, you're knocking people out. In your mind, how long do you think that will take you? Is and what would that mean to you to actually accomplish that goal that you set out for so long ago?
I mean, it's kind of surreal to be here and be doing this. It seems like it wasn't that long ago that I was saying that. That was ninth grade when that happened. It was my English class. But, I mean, it would be a dream come true, but then it's just, I gotta go back to the drawing board and reset my dreams. I'm pretty sure that if, based on how I fought last year, fought 3 times in 4 months, I could fight 2 more times this year after this one. And by those 2 fights, I'd probably be top 5, working my way towards that belt, man.
All right, great
by
stuff.
The end of this year, so I think that's pretty soon, and I'm gonna start going to that chalkboard, that drawing board, and seeing about my dreams and seeing how I can keep that belt and what other things I can do, be in movies and support different companies and do things, start my own businesses. I'm out here trying to figure things out.
Right, now I was done, but I have to follow up with one thing. What's your dream role in a movie?
Oh man, I love movies like Ip Man and Ung Bak, and man, my dream role, I don't know, something like, you know, one of them Michael J. White movies.
Okay.
I love those movies, so those are the ones that I watch on Netflix and things like that. So something like that, man, something like Ip Man. I wanna build an army and then protect my city or something. I don't know.
There you go. Well, Mike Perry, we'll look forward to watching the fight against Jake Ellenberger coming up on Saturday night, and then maybe the UFC title at the end of the year, and who knows, an Oscar by 2020.
Hey, sounds good, man.
There you go. Thanks a lot. We will watch your fight Saturday. Thanks for joining us.
God bless you guys. Peace.
All right. Thanks to Mike Perry. Great job, and you can check him out on the UFC Nashville card coming up this Saturday on Fox Sports 1. That will do it for us. Thanks to Brett Okamoto, as always. Adam Hill from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. You can follow him at BOkamoto ESPN. Follow me at Adam Hill LVRJ. And we will talk to you next Thursday.
MMA Insider Show.